end your arithmetic, you'll probably go far. Inchworm, inchworm, measuring the marigolds, seems to me you'd stop and see how beautiful they are. To and to Arthur, four and four are eight. That's all you have on your business-like mind. To and to Arthur, four and four are. Can you be so blind? Inchworm, inchworm, measuring the marigolds, you and your arithmetic, you'll probably go far. Inchworm, inchworm, measuring the marigolds, seems to me you'd stop and see how beautiful they are. Inchworm, inchworm.
From the film Hans Christian Andersen, which was released back in 1952, it starred Danny Kaye, where he recreated eight songs from Frank Lesser's score. The album of the film came out in January 1953 and got to number one in the Billboard charts and stayed there for an impressive 17 weeks. That was Inchworm, sung by Ed Ames. And a very good morning to you. Welcome to the program. That song was sort of suggested by Frank Wasser, although he doesn't really know it. But now that he's heard it, he probably knows the reason why. Anyway, welcome to Beagley at Night. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours, and I've got some good music for you and all the usual things in just about all the usual places. So it's time to settle back and relax.
Place where we alone can go. No one sails to its shore. There's no shore at all. No house, no door at all. Still it's there, bright and fair, the day you guess the place and its address. That day our happiness will start. Is it far? Thank you. day, you guess the place and its address. That day our happiness will start. Is it far? Is it near? When we kiss, you'll see it clearly. It's the place you hold in my heart.
Well, I'm so used to playing her at about 70 minutes into the program that I forget that I can play her any other time as well. So, you know what, this week we're going to have a little bit of Double D at the start of the program. That was Doris Day, of course, and the song was called, quite simply, I Know a Place. Paul Weston and his orchestra, and that, by the way, was the original 78 RPM. So let me just quickly put back the stylus in the other direction. There we go, otherwise other people get terribly upset.
Marvelous, 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 I'm raving. And when she puckers up her lips so sweet, she's got the brand of kisses can't be beat. Marvelous, marvelous, boys all love. She's mine exclusively, sweet, sweet, marvelous girl.
From Jack Hilton and his orchestra when he's not, says totally messed up the joke now. I was going to say a very funny joke about Jack Hilton and Hilton Hotels, and now because I got the name wrong, I have completely messed it up. Well, no, there's no going back, unfortunately. There's nothing much I can do about it. I'll try and play another Jack Hilton song in a couple of weeks' time, and then I'll do the joke. Well, that was a song called Marvelous. Okay, a little bit late, which was what we were saying around about the same time and around about the same places. It's time for Bing. So, Bing, sing.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done, brother. Can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower up to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done, brother. Can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with the drum. Say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Why don't you remember? I'm your pal. Say, buddy, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, ah, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Oh, say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare a dime? A long time ago, a million years B.C., the best things in life were absolutely free. But no one appreciated a sky that was always blue, and no one congratulated a moon that was always new. So it was planned that they would vanish now and then, and you must pay before you get them back again. That's what storms were made for, and you shouldn't be afraid, for every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven? You'll find your fortune fallen all over
town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down. Trade them for a package of sunshine and flowers. If you want the things you love, you must have showers. So when you hear it thunder, don't run under a tree. There'll be pennies from heaven for you and me. You must have showers. So when you hear it thunder, don't run under a tree. There'll be pennies from heaven for you and me.
It was a lucky April shower. It was the most convenient door. I found a $1 million baby in a 5 and 10 cent store. The rain continued for an hour. I hung around for 3 or 4. Around a $1 million baby in a 5 and 10 cent store. She was selling china, and when she made those eyes, I kept buying china until the crowd got wise. Incidentally, if you should run into a shower, just step inside my cottage door and meet the $1 million baby from the 5 and 10 cent store. Love comes along like a popular song, anytime or anywhere at all. Rain or sunshine, spring or fall. Say you never know when it may say hello in a very unexpected place. For example, take my case. Da 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 da. She was selling china, and when she made those eyes, I kept buying china until the crowd got wise. Incidentally, if you should run into a shower, step inside my cottage door and meet my $1 million baby from the 5 and 10 cent store.
Well, there you go. 3 from Bing Crosby. First up was the very famous Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? The second one was Pennies from Heaven, equally famous. And then we had There I Found a $1 million Baby in a 5 and 10 cent store. We'll have some more songs from Bing, the way he used to sing them, around about the same time next week. Right now, well, we're about 5 minutes, actually about 6 minutes late to go over to Holger's house, but better late than never. Holger, very good morning to you. I hope you are well. Each week, Holger sends us a song from his personal record collection that he thinks that I and thus you will like. And so far, he has proved to be 100% correct, and I have a very funny feeling he's going to be proved correct again this week. It's an instrumental from Lonnie Kellner from 1961. I feel as though I should be able to say 1961 in German. Let's see, it would be 1971, I think. Something like that. Anyway, I know, I'm just showing off. I'll just shut up, shall I? It is a song called Wunderland by Nacht, which I very much suspect is Wonderland by Night, and indeed, Holger confirms that by saying that it is an instrumental of the song by the German Bert Kampfert, who had a number one hit in the United States in 1961. Great song. Here we go.
Strahlen Sterne für uns im Wunderland bei Nacht und wie im Märchen ist unsere Liebe dort erwacht. Reich mir die
surprise that was. I was expecting that to be an instrumental, and then I didn't realize Lonnie Kellner, of course, is the great German singer. She was married to Peter Frankenfeld, and it all fell into place. Very nice song. Thank you so much for that, Holger. You had me going there. I thought, okay, we're replacing one instrumental with another. And then the wonderful voice of Lonnie came in there. Very, very nice. Thank you so much for that. That's certainly going to go into my top five, Holger, to be absolutely honest with you, because for the surprise alone, quite frankly, I think it was worth it. But she's such a great singer, and she sung so many great songs. And, of course, not just a singer, but she was also an actress as well. Holger, thank you so much for that. I really did enjoy it, and I look forward to having another song from your house around about the same time next week. I will do my best to actually play it out on time, but you know what this program's like. Off you go upstairs to the land of Bedfordshire now. Give my love to Christine, and talk soon, I hope. And don't forget, you can listen to Holger here on Angel Radio Wednesday afternoons, and I always get this wrong, but I believe it is 2 p.m. Wednesday afternoon at 2 p.m. That, of course, would be UK time. And do yourself a favor and check out the website just to make absolutely sure, because it really is a great show, like all the shows are here on Angel Radio. But there's something about Holger's accent that I just really, really love. Holger, once again, thank you.
Sword and shield, down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. Gonna lay down my sword and shield, down by the riverside. Study one more. Well, ain't gonna study one more. Study one more. Ain't gonna study one more. Lord, ain't gonna study one more. Study one more. I ain't gonna study one more.
That was Down by the Riverside from the wonderfully talented Mahalia Jackson. You're listening to Beagley at Night here on Angel Radio with me, Roy Beagley. Time now for Beagley's Big Three, which we normally like to do around about 30 minutes into the program. And if I keep talking for about a minute or so, then that should pretty much get there. Good morning to you, Sybil, who actually comes from my old neck of the woods, Bromley, which when I was a kid used to be in Kent, but I don't think it is anymore. I never quite understand exactly what happened when London Borough of Bromley or whatever it was took over. I guess it ceased to be in Kent, like where Greensfree Green is, but I still think of it very much in Kent, and I'm sure since Sybil, you and I are the same age, you probably do as well. Anyway, Sybil has chosen this week's Beagley's Big Three, and now it seems that everybody wants to make sure that the artists and the song need no introduction. Otherwise, I think people feel they failed. Don't worry if they do need an introduction. It's perfectly fine. It is, after all, what I'm here to do, right? So, but Sybil, you've managed to come up with a great selection of songs from a great artist who really does need no introduction, or as that doesn't need an introduction. Whatever, no introduction.
We're always on the outside, on the outside, always looking in. We never never know what fortunes are made. For the sun, when it shines, finds us both in the shade. We're always on the ebb tide, but we'll keep on trying till we win. For we know someday we're going to be on the inside instead of the outside, always looking in. We're very ordinary people, we never make any fuss. We're the easygoing kind, if you look around you'll find there's a million like us. We're always on the outside, on the outside, always looking in. We never know how fortunes are made, for the sun when it shines finds us both in the shade. We're always on the ebb tide, but we'll keep on trying till we win. For we know someday we're going to be on the inside instead of the outside, always looking in. We'll keep on trying till we win. For we know someday we're going to be on the inside instead of the outside, always looking in. Thank you.
letter to roaming vagabonds are we.
Miss you since you went away, dear. Miss you more than I can say, dear. Daytime, nighttime, nothing I do can make me forget that I still love you. Kiss you in my dreams, I kiss you. Whispering, darling, how I miss you. Tell me, do you ever miss me as I miss you?
As soon as you hear the dulcet tones of Flanagan and Allen, you know immediately who it is. Three great songs there, and the interesting thing, Sybil, is that I didn't have any of them in my pile of Flanagan and Allen records. And DAB Dave is a fan of Flanagan and Allen, and he sent me a lot of their songs. But those were three songs that were new to me. Thank you so much for that. We started off with On the Outside, Looking In, and then we had Wanderer, and then finally Miss You. So thank you for those. Sybil really did enjoy them. And if you would like to do what Sybil did this week, next week, then you can. All you have to do is do what Sybil did last week, this week, and that is email me, roy@angelradio.uk, and let me know the artist and also the songs, if you want to choose the songs. And if you want me to choose the songs, well, that's fine as well. I'm very happy to do that. It's either is fine. But Sybil, thank you so much. I do like a little bit of Flanagan and Allen. Might play Underneath the Arches a little bit later on, and we'll have a sing-along. We'll see how it goes. All right, it's time now, and in fact, it's practically dead on time, which is rather worrying, for this week's Tell Me a Story.
Always Afternoons by Stella Whitelaw, read by Sandra Dickinson.
She was not seeing him nearly enough. Once a week at first, occasionally twice. It was never enough. The time between meetings was a gray abyss, hours to be counted off, days to be endured. She kept busy, darning the time together with meaningless activities, using mental blotting paper for the pain. She had a dream. To see him every day, to wake each morning with his musky, spicy body beside hers, relaxed in sleep. To sleep or not to sleep, a whole night through in his arms. A whole night. That luxury was beyond her wildest, scattiest dreams. To see him on those band days, weekends, holidays, birthdays, Christmas, once fun days, now barely tolerated. Afternoons. But we only have afternoons, she complained, rolling away from him, staring at the pale watercolor on the hotel wall. If only time could freeze for them as it had for those pastel children of long ago in floppy sun hats, staring forever into a silent rock pool. Everything's so rushed. We barely have time to talk. It's all we can have, and you know that, Hal said, tracing her sloping and childish shoulders with his fingers. I know that I know, she said. But I don't want to be a PM person. I want to pretend that we're different. Yet their afternoons together did not feel rushed, sharpened by the long anticipation beforehand. Daisy called them the electric hours when the hands of the clock finally propelled her towards him. When they met, the chemistry fused afresh. Hands touched, eyes glowed, and the time ahead seemed endless. 120 minutes. Romeo and Juliet survived on less. They were both married to other people. They each had a package of children, mortgages, demanding jobs and homes. But it was not enough. They wanted each other as well. How can pair bonding be for life, argued Hal after listening to a wildlife talk on his car radio. Animals don't do it. They mate with different partners. Swans don't, said Daisy. People expect marriage to be 100% till death us do part. That could be 30, 40, even 50 years together these days, he groaned. We all live too long. We're going to be found out one day, he said. She pressed her finger to his mouth. But not this afternoon. This afternoon we have a magic circle protecting us. He wasn't listening properly. We'll make a mistake, he predicted. Hal's wife was called Claire. She was a tall, cool blonde who wore elegant clothes. She was everything that Daisy wished she was. She longed for Claire's height, her straight nose, her husband. Daisy saw them together once. It was a shattering experience, like being knifed between the ribs, a single swipe that severed nerve ends. They were coming out of a London theater, a smash-hit musical that Daisy would never get to see. The ticket prices were the kind of money she'd had for housekeeping. Claire had looked at Daisy for one instant, over other heads in the street. A look that registered, but could not possibly have meant anything. Daisy was only another harassed young woman rushing home from an evening drama course at the Polytechnic. Maybe it was the stunned look in Daisy's eyes that caught Claire's attention. Daisy hurried to the underground station, trying to quiet her pounding heart. She learned a lot from that rapier glance. It was the look of a fighter. Daisy would not stand a chance if it came to open warfare. She'd felt a knife going in. Hal and Daisy met several times before they became lovers. They met at a distant cousin's 10th birthday party when Daisy insisted that Hal had eaten her slice of the cake. They met again at the same cousin's 21st birthday party, and Hal dutifully trod on Daisy's toes once round the dance floor. It was not until that convenient cousin got married that Hal and Daisy noticed each other properly. My wife couldn't come, said Hal at the crowded reception, making his status clear from the beginning. She's had to go and see my mother. My husband's over there, said Daisy, reciprocating, the cowboy ambushing every drinks tray. Perhaps he doesn't like weddings. He doesn't like me, said Daisy. But Hal liked her. He liked her very much. He liked her funny nose, her touchable hair. Claire's golden mane was out of bounds. Her wistful and hesitant voice. She was insecure, overworked, unloved, and thought drama classes would give her more confidence at home and in the office. Sometimes she felt she was submerged in mediocrity. Hal gathered her into his fold, took her under his multi-layered wing. They knew they were going to have an affair. They recognized something in the other that seemed to complete an equation. Guilt never entered into it. They were not hurting anyone, they told each other. As long as neither family was neglected or suffered in any way. Her husband took little interest in her whereabouts as long as food was on the table and her paycheck took care of the mortgage. Their two children, both girls, were totally self-absorbed in school activities. That first Christmas was agony. Daisy and Hal could not meet nor even speak on the telephone. The family festivities clamped Daisy with tinsel-covered barbed wire, conveyor-belted her through the relentless jollity, cracker-pulling, overeating. She tried not to imagine Hal at home with his elegant wife and well-behaved, well-educated sons at the select drinks party they were holding for their select friends. "God, I missed you," Hal said the first afternoon afterward, holding her as if he would never let her go. "I kept thinking of you, wondering what you were doing. All those stupid people talking, posturing, saying things they didn't mean, sloshing down my drink. Claire being the perfect hostess, of course. She always is." "I drank everything in sight," Daisy confessed. "It was the only way. I had to blot you out." "I don't like the sound of being blotted out," he said, pulling off his tie. "It makes me feel like a hangover. Come here. I don't want to pretend anymore." Daisy did not understand exactly what he meant. She knew he provided something that the perfect Claire did not, and it was not just her rounded body. She was a haven where Hal drank at her fountain. He needed her, and that was all she had to know. She took his head onto the tingling fullness of her bare breasts and felt his breath feathering her skin like angel's wings. Hal had thrown her a life belt just when she was drowning. She'd been slipping from the reality of life as surely as if Clapham Junction was the Bermuda Triangle. Though their time together was always short, Hal often slept. He was desperately tired, stressed, competing in a financial rat race to keep Claire in Armani suits, cleaning ladies, and his children at private schools. He dozed in Daisy's arms, some inner alarm waking him when it was time to leave. "I can't bear it when you go to sleep," Daisy wept, her body craven and unfulfilled. It was going to be 10 days before they met again. "It's such a waste of our time together." "I'm sorry, sweetheart," he said, kissing her wearily, soft, aimless kisses like a dying moth. "But I can still feel you. I always know you're there." Daisy had to be content with that. When Claire found out, she was furious. Hal's customary attention to detail was diverted, and he carelessly left a hotel receipt in his jacket. Claire found it when she took his suit to the cleaners. She made inquiries at the hotel and discovered it was for a double room midweek. Hal had not been away on any business trip that date, which might have explained it. She put two and two together and made 5.5. Claire exploded like an erupting glacier. Her exterior cracked in all directions, spitting out shards of ice. "Don't worry," she raged. "I'll find out who the little slut is." Hal was stunned. He'd never expected to be found out so soon. He defended Daisy with every scrap of ingenuity in his command. He cared for her and would not have her slurred, defamed, or insulted. "It's entirely my fault," he said. "I took advantage of a young woman who's vulnerable and lonely. But at no time has she ever been a threat to you. I care for her because she is not strong like you, Claire." Hal did not use the word love. Claire looked too dangerous. He was frightened not so much for himself, but for Daisy's sake. Claire was like a serpent, venom darting from every fingertip. She described exactly in that ice-cubed voice of hers what she would do to Daisy, Daisy's home, Daisy's family. "But how can she ever find out it's me?" said Daisy over the phone, her breath ragged with fear. "There's that about-to-be-divorced convenient cousin of ours. Claire's been seeing a lot of her recently. They might put their heads together." "Claire can't hurt you, can she? Can she make trouble?" "Yes, she can in many ways. My parents, at work. I'm not 100% secure. And then there's the boys. She's threatened to tell them, take them away from me." Daisy took several deep breaths, watching her hands twisting the telephone cord into knots. "I can't let that happen to you," she said. "I'm not letting you go." "You must. We always said the children came first. You know we always said that. They're growing up. One day they'll realize that we're entitled to happiness." "Mine are not grown up enough. I'm only entitled to be a mother and a wife. My happiness doesn't come into it." "What about my happiness?" said Hal angrily. He could see himself losing his funny Daisy, his all-loving woman who gave him her body afresh each time with a sweetness that never ceased to astonish him. He did not know what he'd done to deserve her. They'd had such brief moments together. Claire had everything else of his, a wealth of bed and board, holidays, home, status, financial provision, life insurance. She wanted his soul as well. "I love you," said Daisy, putting down the phone. Claire tracked Daisy down via the convenient cousin. She homed in on her in a taupe suit, high-heeled, wearing an impenetrable cloud of Dior's poison like armor. Daisy immediately felt shorter, creased, humiliated. And she could never wear taupe. "I can't understand what Hal sees in you," said Claire, sweeping her lashes over Daisy's appearance like a vacuum cleaner. "He must be going out of his mind, a midlife crisis. I suppose you know who I am." Yes, said Daisy. I've seen you before. Daisy did not know how she was going to cope with this rampant wife. She cringed back into her anorak, glad she was not at home, that at least they were on neutral ground, glad that Hal was not there. She would not want him to see her cornered. Leave my husband alone. Clara's ultimatum was as deadly as a cruise missile. If you don't, then I'll call on your husband, your children, and your employer. How would you like that? Not a lot, said Daisy, lifting her chin. I'm sure your children will be delighted to know that you're a whore. They'd probably find it marginally more interesting than my being their mother. So you're a failure at being both mother and wife. That figures. Well, let me tell you, I'm successful in both roles, and I intend to stay that way. Have I made myself clear? You've made it clear why Hal needs me in his life, thought Daisy, wishing she had the courage to say it aloud. A few months later, Daisy would have given everything she owned for just one afternoon with Hal. She moved through the days like a robot. She could not remember what she did or said, ate very little, existed on cups of tea. Her husband never noticed, but the girls did. You all right, Mom? Her elder daughter asked as the teapot shook in Daisy's hand. Perhaps you've got flu coming on. There's a lot of it about. There's a lot of loneliness about, too, Daisy thought, as she mopped up the spilt tea. It was not easy to put Hal out of her life. She was not a fighter, and there was no one rooting on her side. Hal phoned a few times. She took to leaving the phone off the hook. She changed to a better job, signed on for another drama course, had her hair cut. Hal always liked to run his hands through her hair. Now there was none to run through. She got thin and her clothes hung on her in folds. She went quiet as if she'd forgotten how to speak, waiting for the grieving to end. An uncontested divorce, after all. Daisy saw it briefly reported in the newspapers. Claire had taken her full revenge, and Daisy waited with faint, spiraling hope. But Hal did not phone. Perhaps it had hurt too much, and he did not want to reopen the wound. She could understand that. As time went by, she thought she understood everything about him, but that did not make it any easier. It was 2 years before she saw Hal again. She caught her breath in shock at the sight of his tall, stooping figure. He was going into a restaurant, very posh. He had his hand protectively on a woman's arm, being the perfect escort, as always. The woman was another Claire, a Mark II model. Tall, blonde, sleek, long on hair, short on moral credentials. Even in the dusk of that November evening, Daisy saw the flash of diamonds on the woman's finger. Daisy knew it was a new ring, remembered quite clearly the old one. Daisy felt a certain rashness coming over her. It was a brush-off from all those drama classes. In a way, she admired the Mark II model for stepping in where she'd feared to tread. She went up to the blonde, not looking at Hal, and tapped her on the arm. "Hello, convenient cousin," she said. "I didn't realize you were waiting in the wings." The woman flashed a smile of recognition. "Hello, Daisy. I knew you'd fluff your lines eventually. You always were hopeless, even as a little girl. I remember you crying at a party because Hal had eaten your slice of birthday cake." "He did, too," said Daisy. "How are you, Daisy?" Hal asked, his voice expressionless. He looked older, worn, graying at the side, still running a financial rat race to pay for his divorce, his new marriage. "I'm very busy," she said, wildly inventing lots of things in her head. But Hal did not ask, so she did not say. He looked embarrassed, and because she loved him, she let him off the hook. Long ago, he had saved her from drowning. "Particularly afternoons," she added before walking away. It was thoughtlessly cruel, but she could not stop herself.
And that was Sandra Dickinson reading Always Afternoons, short love stories here on Angel Radio. And we'll have another Tell Me a Story round about the same time next week.
on a sunbeam on my way to you. Not a cloud is gonna stop me, I'll be coming right straight through, 'cause I'm sailing on a sunbeam on my way to you. We're gonna get married and how? Too long we have tarried, it won't be long now. Set the wedding bells a-ringing, let the whole world know it's true, 'cause I'm sailing on a sunbeam on my way to you.
Par les nuits chaudes du mois d'août, comme il fait doux, comme il fait doux. La mer est là tout à côté, et les cigales en gaieté chantent l'été, chantent l'été. Le ciel de chaque étoile est amoureux, et même au loin les voiles vont par deux. Venez, chérie, venez, je m'ennuie de vous. Le matin, la Méditerranée a les yeux moins bleus que vous. Venez, chérie, un seul jour est plus long qu'une année quand je suis sans vous. De ma fenêtre en me levant, je vois les îles du Levant, juste devant, juste devant. Un vieux pêcheur tout basané pourrait là-bas dans la journée nous emmener, et seul sous un soleil d'Océanie, on vivrait comme Paul et Virginie. Venez, chérie, venez, je m'ennuie de vous. Le matin, la Méditerranée a les yeux moins bleus que vous. Venez, chérie, venez, je m'ennuie de vous. Un seul jour est plus long qu'une année quand je suis sans vous. N'attendez non plus une journée, mon amour, venez.
Well, that was Tino Rossi and a Serenade Méditerranéenne, and before that, Paul Sprecht and his orchestra with vocalizations from Johnny Morris. Now, I don't know if it's the same Johnny Morris that used to do Animal Magic or not. Probably isn't, I wouldn't have thought. But he was singing, I am sailing on a sunbeam, which is indeed is sort of what I'm doing. Good morning to you. Welcome to Angel Radio. If you've just joined us, you've missed a very good hour of Beagley at Night, but you've got a good hour left as well. So welcome. We are on FM in the Portsmouth, Havant and Gosport area of the UK. We're also on various DAB thingies, which is as technical as I can get. And we're also on the internet. And to get details of how you can listen on DAB or the internet, you can go to angelradio.co.uk. At the top of each hour, or the top of the hour of the program here, we have a little bit of posh, which could be anything, really. It's usually a little bit of classical music, and you know what, this week it is as well. Well, that was the third movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 7 in A major, and that was the London Symphony Orchestra, and Josef Krips was waving the stick at the orchestra, and that came from 1960. And we'll have another bit of posh around about the same time next week right here on Angel Radio. Now, long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away, when Brad in Chicago was a mere nipper of a lad, he invented something called Day at Night here on Beagley at Night. It was a very simple idea. It would be playing Doris Day songs at night, and it would be a nice play on the words day and night. And here we are many centuries later, and we're still doing it. So, from the invention from Brad, or Bradford as he's known to his friends, or Bradford United as he's known to a few of us, here is Day at Night.
Confess.
Confess, confess.
Why don't you confess?
Say yes, say yes.
You'd reveal to me.
Reveal to me
the way that you feel.
Why don't you tell me the way that you'd feel?
Confess,
confess, confess.
It isn't a crime.
Oh no, no crime.
To open your heart to me.
Confide in me
and say that you're mine.
Why don't you tell me you're gonna be mine?
How long can I keep waiting for a tender word from you? The sweetest rose starts fading when the sunshine won't come through. Confess,
confess, confess.
Please don't make me guess.
Don't make me guess.
If you really care.
If you could care,
then darling, confess.
Confess,
confess, confess.
Why don't you confess?
Say yes, say yes.
I wish you'd reveal to me.
Reveal to me
the way that you feel.
You know the way.
It isn't a crime.
Oh no, no crime.
To open your heart to me.
Confide in me.
And say that you're mine.
Why don't you tell me you're gonna be mine?
How long can I keep waiting for a tender word from you? The sweetest rose starts fading when the sunshine won't come through.
Confess.
I'm ready now to confess.
Please don't make me guess.
Won't make you guess.
If you really care for me.
I really do.
Then, darling, confess.
Difference just how sad or blue you are. One never knows about tomorrow, just what another day may bring. One moment in your heart, it's winter. Comes a rose and suddenly it's spring. There'll be times of sorrow. There'll be times of joy and a bright tomorrow for each girl and boy. Who knows what happiness is waiting? Just a kiss away from where. There's a rising moon for every falling star. Happiness is waiting just a kiss away from where you are. There's a rising moon for every fall.
Sleep.
was a racehorse, and I wish he was mine. He never drank water, he always drank wine. His bridle was silver, his mane it was gold, and the worth of his saddle has never been told. Now the fairgrounds were crowded, and Stewball was there, but the betting was heavy on the bay and the bet on the gray mare, and you can bet on the bay. If you'd have bet on old Stewball, you'd be a rich man. If you'd have bet on old Stewball, you'd be a rich man today. Stewball was a racehorse, and I wish he was mine. He never drank water, he always drank wine. He always drank wine.
Lots of people have recorded that, but I think that's the nicest version that I've heard in a long time. It was Stewball from Doris Day for this week, because I called Brad in Chicago, Bradford United, which I think I'm probably the only one that found funny. And I'm still laughing. I'm sorry, Brad. I shouldn't. And we started off with Confess. And Buddy Clark was singing with Doris on that one. And then there's A Rising Moon and also Sleepy Baby. And along with Stewball, that's our four songs that made up this week's Day at Night. And you'll have another chance to hear some more songs from Doris Day around about the same time next week. And my thanks to Brad for inventing that little segment.
Angel Radio, music and memories.
Thank you for your donations, which help to keep us on air. Angel Radio.
Y el alma le ofrecí junto a mis besos, yo la quiero. Su gran amor sentí muy tiernamente. Sus besos devolví. como mi amor, ha de pasar a la eternidad. Y las estrellas son resplandecientes que guiarán mi amor eternamente. Yo la quiero.
Sure, that was written by Lennon and McCartney. It was called And I Love Her. Came from 1967, and a great group called the Sandpipers, which I like a lot, along with Angela and Peter and Gosport. They like the Sandpipers as well. And if you're listening, Angela and Peter, a very good morning to you. Hope you are well. Let's see, what should we... Let me look at the clock on the wall and see how it... Oh, my goodness, we've only just got over half an hour left. I think I should do some comedy, don't you?
Good afternoon. I was born and bred in Ivinhoe. I was born at my granny's. That's a nice little village, is Ivinhoe, like what they calls interdenominational. That's got a church, a Ebenezer Strict Baptist, a Wesleyan Reform, a Bethel, and a little Salvation Army made out of corrugated iron. Ah, and when that rains, that don't half rattle. Only, of course, 'tis nice soft water. I'm church myself, St. Mark's, what they calls perpendicular. That was built by the Vikings in the 11th century afore the railway come. There's got some fine old crusaders in 'em, like these here stone statutes where he lays underneath, and they put these here stone statutes on the lid so's he recognise himself. Only I don't reckon nobody will recognise him, because us have been sharpening our sickles and fagging hooks on him ever since I can remember, and he hadn't got no face then. Us gets into church at night and sharps our sickles and fagging hooks on this year old crusader. Ah, all over him. I reckon that's the finest bit of sharpening stone in Hertfordshire. Only, of course, nobody don't know that's been handed down like. I had to laugh at our old vicar showing some folks over the church. He says, this year old crusader, he says, was defaced by Oliver Cromwell at the time of the Revelation. I had to laugh. he lays there quite comfortable-like with his old woman alongside him. I reckon that's the finest bit of sharpening stone in Hertfordshire. Only his old woman ain't no good. Can't get no edge out of her. He have a little dog lays at his feet, like a little crusading dog what used to follow after him down by the Crimea. Only I reckon that's more like a whippet, if you ask me. That stands over again the organ. I like music. I used to sing in the choir, only they reckon my voice was a bit too spiteful. I might know Charlie Hawkins said to me one time, he said, you got a belly full of music, Jimmy, but a bad road out. But I had a tidy good education. I could read when I was 18. Only, of course, not to understand it. Not like that old Miss Piggott what used to play the organ. I hated the sights of her. I couldn't abide her. They reckon her dad was a big army gentleman left over from the mutinies. But she was very hot on the temperance. I mind she seed my barra stood outside the Rose and Cream one time. I'd been over to get some bean sticks from by the crab tree, and I stood my bar outside the Rose and Crown, and she seen it stood there. So I sees her on the Tuesday, and she starts off at me. She says, I seed your bar stood outside the Rose and Crown, she says. That's intemperance, she says. Look not upon the wine when it is red, she says, because at the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like a adder. Proverbs 25, 31 and 32. But I said, I was never inside the Rose and Cream. I said, I never come near. And she says, I seed your barra stood outside. She says, that's intemperance, that's intemperance. So I seed it wasn't no good arguing. I touched me hat and I said, good afternoon. About 3 or 4 days afterwards, I left my barra stood outside her front door all night.
Writer of children's books. The scene takes place in the book department of a large store, where she has been autographing copies, and now she's going to talk to her young readers. Hello, boys and girls. I was so pleased when you asked me to come along and tell you about how I write my books for children. Well, of course, the answer is I don't. No, my books write themselves for me. I think we're all little ones at heart, aren't we, grown-ups? Yes, even the growly bear daddy's at the back. And I don't believe I have ever grown up. And I think perhaps that is my secret. That and the fact that kiddies come first with me. Well, as you know, children, I write lots and lots of books for you, and this is how I set about it. Well, first of all, I go upstairs to my hidey hole. Well, really, it's just a great big upstairs workroom, but I like to call it my hidey-hole. And I pin a notice on the door, and it says, Gone to Make-Believe Land. That's just my way of saying, please don't come and bother me, because a book is writing itself for me, and we mustn't disturb it, must we? And then I sit down at my work table, and I put a clean white sheet of paper into my typewriter, and I close my eyes. And what do I see? I see a rambling old house in Cornwall, and I hear seagulls, and I see children, 1, 2, 3 children, scrambling up the cliffs because they're very nearly late for tea, and their names are Jennifer Ann and Robin John, and there's a little one at the back, and he is called Midge, because he is the littlest one. Oh, yes, he has a proper name. It's Anthony Timothy Jeremy Michael, and he doesn't like porridge, but we won't tell anybody, will we? And I sit there, and I type, and I type, and as I do so, I learn all about Jennifer Ann's unruly mop of red curls and her way with hedgehogs, and about Robin John, who is more of a fish than a boy. Oh, you should see him dive from the top diving board. And all about their father, kindly, overworked, sunburnt, twinkling Dr. Merriweather. And then all of a sudden, it's dinner time, and I rub my eyes and I find myself back in my hidey-hole. And look, there's a great pile of typewritten pages on the table beside me. They must have written themselves while the story told itself to me. And so I go on till a book is made. And then I start another one. And this time it's a rambling old house in Yorkshire. And hark, I hear sheep bells. And look, I see children, 3 children, and their names are Sarah Mary, Jonathan Christopher, and there's a little one at the back, and he is called Tiddler, because he is the littlest one, etc., etc. It's always the same with me. No, I never revise, I never rewrite, and I never read what I have written. But you children do. Millions and millions of you children do, and that is my great joy. And it is my husband's great joy, too. He has given up his work to encourage me in mine. And together we have made hidey holes for each of our five children so they too may learn to let books write themselves for them. And my husband has his own hidey hole where he adds up. Well, I think perhaps it's time I got back to my hidey hole, don't you?
Joy, are you honest to do here?
Well, there's no one
here, no. Oh, don't be daft. Let's soon gather round. Might get some lolly here. Now, you start off, girl. Right, now, go on, belt away with the music and I'll lock round with the box.
Okay, now. Oh, I don't off, I love ya. I don't off, I don't. Oh, I want off, I love ya. Forever I won't. Oh, you ain't off, a smasher. Oh, you ain't off, okay. I don't not think a lot of you. Every
night
and
best.
Every day.
Oh, I won't know, I love you till the stars don't never shine. And I don't not need you, cause you're mine. So don't you never not be there and don't ask never part. Cause I don't not love you, darling, my sweetheart.
Now I'll pop round with a box and you have a bash.
Okay, me old joy bell. Oh, I don't know, love ya. No, not all, I don't. Oh, I won't know, love ya. Forever I won't. You ain't all the smasher. You ain't all the one. I won't know, hang around for you every day when day is done.
Oh, I won't off, love ya till the stars don't ever shine. And I won't off, need ya, cause you're mine.
It's all the noise. So don't you never not be there and don't us never part. Cause I don't know if I love you, darling, my sweetheart.
I thought you said we'd soon have a crowd round us. It's no good here, it's too posh, Noel.
Oh, all right then, well, let's sing it posh, eh?
Okay.
Oh, I don't half love you. No, not half, I don't. No, I won't half love you. Forever I won't. You won't half a smasher. What? Eh? I don't half think a lot of you. Every night and every day. Oh, I won't half love you till the stars don't never shine. And I won't half need you cause you're mine. Oh, joy, come on, let's be ourselves. So don't you never not be there and don't us never part. Cause I don't half love you, darling, my sweetheart. Thank you, lady.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You are most kind. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight, this confessions by ear. Oh, dear, I mean, it is. No, don't laugh. Don't wink. No, don't be wicked. No, don't. It's wicked to. No, don't. It's wicked to mock the afflicted. No, I mean, it is tonight. I had a terrible rush to get here, you see, and I got caught in the underpass. And it's a. It's very painful, you know. Are you the same, missus? Are you the same girl? Yes. Well, you're the same problem. Yes, you're sure it's not tight underwear? Well, wriggle, dear, wriggle. Nothing worse. Now, what am I going to say? Tonight. Now, what am I going to tell you about, eh? Well, I'm going to tell you about some of my war experiences. Now, I had... It's the underpass. No, I had some very fond memories of the army. And the fondest memory I had of the army was the day I left it. And now all we lads had to put away our tin hats. So I put mine under the bed. Because I thought, wait a minute. It might come in useful in case of an emergency. So, the thing was this. My own unit was renowned for its spirit, for having so much spirit. Oh, they were a drunken mob, believe it. Oh, no, the thing, here, you'd have died. You would have died. I shall never forget our first reunion after the war, you see, and because that what started my life of crime. Life of crime, I must admit it. Once upon a time, France is crept into the corrupt. Yes. It all started because of this reunion. Mind you, it's nice to these reunions because you see, you meet old comrades there. Very interesting to meet old comrades like there was Chalky White and there was Sergeant Hardman, and he was a veteran. Yes, a veteran, but he'd seen it all. Well, yeah, well, I say all, he'd, as much as he could. Well, he had a damn good try. Well, yeah, no, if you're at home, no, you see, no, if you're away from home for a long time, you have to, see, and mind you, no, shut your face to me.
Catch you up, shall I? Because I haven't been around for a little while, or at least it seems like it. We started off our little comedy section there with Bernard Miles and Over the Gate, and then we had a couple from Joyce Grenfell, the writer of children's books, and I Don't Half Love You. And then we had some confessions from Frankie Howard, and what we just heard there was Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra and Rigmarole. So that's caught you up to date, and I think we've probably got about another 15 minutes to go. So settle back and relax and enjoy this.
But now, my love, now that you've left me, how can I live through another day, watching my dreams turn into ashes and my hopes into bits of clay? Once I could see, once I could feel, now I am numb, I've become unreal. I walk the night without a goal, stripped of my heart, my soul. What now, my love? Now
a little belter, Shirley Bassey from 1965, and What Now, My Love.
And look around you, and you'll see who you are. On a clear day, how it will astound you that the glow of your being outshines every star. You feel part of every mountain, sea, and shore. You can hear from far and near a world you've never heard before. And on a clear day, on that clear day, you can see.
See it, you know they are smiling. words are simple and few. Listen, listen, she's calling to you. Feed the birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag. She's calling to you. Feed the birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a
honestly feel, and I don't say this very often, but I honestly feel that that is one of the best songs ever written, period. It's just absolutely wonderful. From the Sherman Brothers, and that was Julie Andrews and the Disney Studio Chorus, and Feed the Birds. There's just something so wonderful about that, and it always brings tears to my eyes. Before that, we had Robert Goulet and On a Clear Day, and Shirley Bassey was before Bob and What Now, My Love. And I think that's brought you up to date with just about everything. And what have we got here? We've got about 5.5 minutes to go, so I think we can probably fit in 2 songs if I'm quick.
Without you, what am I to do? So help me if you don't love me.
Morgan and his orchestra with Gloria Whitney providing the vocalizations there, and So Help Me and So Help Me. I'm out of time. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I will be back, all being well, around about the same time next week when we get to do it all again. So until then, I wish you a good week and a safe week. I play out with this, and may I be the first to wish you a very good morning.